Hello and welcome to another edition of Coffee Talk. My name is Trevor Huth, and usually I would be joined by Mr. Nate the Great Kosher. Nate is at a work conference. He decided that getting paid by a full-time job was more important than this podcast. I don't know. That's on him. We'll talk to him next week, see what that's all about. But he did find somebody excellent to fill in, and that is Raking Jake Crumpler.
Ooh.
Oh, I don't know. I try to keep it baseball related. I told him I was going to come up with a nickname. That's what came off the top. But Jake, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Yeah, I'll take that nickname. I have not heard that one. I've heard plenty of nicknames coming off Jake. My personal favorite is Crump, which my high school friends called me because my best friend's name was Jake in high school. So I've been Crump for a while. But you know, I'll take Raking Jake because I am on an adult softball team now, and I could use some support.
There we go. So, Jake, you obviously work at PitcherList. Why don't you just give us a quick rundown? What do you do at PitcherList? What kind of content can we see from you?
Sure. Yeah, I do quite a bit at PitcherList nowadays. As many people probably know, I'm on the In the Pen podcast with Rick Graham. That's PitcherList Bullpen podcast. I do that every single week. It comes out on Friday mornings. I also do the weekend editions of the First Pitch podcast. So every Saturday and Sunday morning, you can catch me on there. I write a weekly reliever ranks article. I'm a co-manager of the Going Deep team. And then I also write for Baseball HQ and have a personal podcast.
So not much then? You don't do a whole lot?
Not really. And I have a full-time job. So I have definitely enough stuff to do in my free time.
Well, I'm glad that you took your extra free time to join us here on Coffee Talk. We're going to jump right in and just get to the content. We usually do our What's Brewing segment. That's where we look around at the news. Since Nate is not here to stop me, I think the What's Brewing needs to just be prospect call-ups, because we've seen a lot of guys going up and going down. And I kind of want to cover some of them. Obviously, the biggest one is Jackson Holliday and not performing great through his early attempt at the major leagues. I'm guessing he'll have basically unlimited leash, but Jake, have you taken a look at Holliday at all since his call up?
Yeah, of course. I mean, he's the number one prospect in baseball. I had to go watch him when he debuted. I drafted him in my home league inside the top 200, and I felt really stupid when it happened because he started the year in the minor leagues, but 10 days later and I'm feeling much better. He's looked a little overmatched. I don't know if it's a mental thing or if it's maybe his game's just not quite ready for the major league level, but considering his talent and his pedigree, I think things should turn around. I think he probably just needs to be less aggressive, and that's probably why he's striking out so much, just pushing too hard to make things happen.
Yeah, you know, it feels a little bit like he's just pressing. Mm-hmm. He's number one overall draft pick, shot through the minor leagues, at an insane pace. Matched only by like Wyatt Langford, who was quicker, but he was on top of the world, and he has all these expectations. Obviously his dad was a big leaguer. It just seems like there's a lot coming at him, which, you know, he had to know being a professional baseball player, having the family he has and everything. But it seemed like to me, when I would see highlights, to be fair, I never watched a full game, but I'd watch highlights, I would watch at-bats. It just seemed like he's pressing a little, just trying to make something happen because there's the weight of the expectation that says it needs to happen. Mm-hmm. And he just needs one. He needs to run into one, and he did. So hopefully we start seeing a little bit better. But from Holliday here, I mean, he's got all the talent in the world. I mean, you said maybe his game's not ready. Personally, I think his game is ready. I think he just needs to settle in and realize that this is still just baseball. It's the best baseball he's ever going to see, like the best talent he's ever going to see, best competition he's ever going to see. But it is just baseball, and he is one of the most talented baseball players on this planet.
Totally.
That's how I feel about it, at least. So
I agree.
Jackson Holliday, of course, not necessarily a Coffee Talk guy, right? Everybody knows who he is. He probably wasn't available to pick up because, just like Jake and just like me, we've all drafted him, right? He's on rosters. People were just holding him, waiting for him to come up. On the other hand, a guy who was probably at least a little bit available, Max Meyer, got sent down today after three really good starts. He's been pitching very well to start the year, which is awesome considering all the injuries in his past. And you just love to see it because he's a really good pitcher. But then it's time for Edward Cabrera. And to my surprise, I mean, if you look at the expected starting pitchers, I did not anticipate this. They send down Max Meyer. So I don't know if you have any thoughts or insight on that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He's a guy returning from Tommy John surgery. So, of course, the Marlins are going to want to be careful with him. On top of that, with the new management in place, the new leadership group manning the baseball operations department with Kim Engon, they're coming over from the Rays, so expect them to be pretty cheap. We've seen the Marlins be pretty cheap as a team for a long time, and I don't really expect that to change. So another factor here is that they're trying to secure an extra year of service time for Max Meyer, an extra year of control. And while he has pitched really well, I don't quite see him living up to the potential that he displayed when he was a top prospect. There's something about him that feels underwhelming. His most recent start was something that I think should have definitely kept him on the team. He destroyed the Braves for six innings while allowing one run and striking out seven. He earned a gallows pull on the day as well. So Max Meyer definitely seems like he could be a Toby that has occasional days of dominance when he's got all of his pitches working. But I see what the Marlins are doing. I don't think it's fair, but they're going to have to do this again with somebody else when Braxton Garrett returns.
If he returns this season. Now, Braxton Garrett also came out today, kind of a dead arm period, will push him, push his return back as well. And, you know, we make all these comments about Max Meyer going down for Edward Cabrera. Last I saw, Cabrera had double digit strikeouts in his outing. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty good. I guess we can't really complain too much, but imagine those two in the same rotation. That's just me. It'll happen at some point. Holy, this isn't a forever send down for Max Meyer, but it you know, it's just kind of odd that they chose him, I think, is where I stand with it, because he's clearly been their best pitcher to this point.
I think what they should have done is moved AJ Puck back to the bullpen, because Tanner Scott's been terrible as the closer, and Puck was the team's closer in the first half of last year. And they wouldn't have to move anybody off of the roster. It would just be Puck to the bullpen, and then drop one of the one of the early inning relievers that you've got in your roster that are pretty expendable.
And that may still happen, right? We don't know what's going to happen. It's also possible that they just decided, hey, we want to keep our relievers intact for now, and Max Meyer might be back up, by the next turn to start, whatever. Mm-hmm. It could be. It's probably going to be a very short send down. I wouldn't be dropping him or getting rid of him or anything if you roster him necessarily, unless you absolutely have to, just because I don't anticipate him being down for too long. I've been wrong before, and I'm purely just speculating here. So, if he's down for 3 months and you've held on to him, you can yell at me through Twitter, and I will apologize profusely, but I just can't see them keeping him down for that long personally. Another pitcher made his debut today coming up. And when I say today, we're recording on Monday, as we usually do. And that is Nick Nastrini with the Chicago White Sox. I saw on Pitching Ninja, I saw two strikeouts, and they looked pretty nasty. So I think Nastrini had a good day. I also saw on Twitter, we were talking about how good looking he is. So he's having a great day all around, personally and baseball-wise. Have you been able to catch any of the Nick Nastrini stuff, Jake?
I have not. I'm trying to open Twitter while we're recording to see these gifts you're talking about. They look pretty nice. I've been at work all day, and then I had a crazy house meeting. But yeah, I mean, Nick Nastrini is definitely something, definitely a pitcher I'm excited about. I picked him up in one of my NFBC leagues. It's hard to keep him straight. But I do believe in him, basically just because of how he pitched during spring training. He really caught Nick's eye. I turned to Nick for a lot of my pitcher analysis, which I'm sure many people do. And then you got to make your own opinions based off what he says. But in spring training, at a 3.77 ERA, the only problem, he was walking a lot of guys. But I do believe that his stuff that he displayed during spring training is major league ready. And with a path to a consistent role in that rotation, I'm pretty excited there. The only problem is there are going to be absolutely no wins for this absolutely terrible White Sox squad.
Yeah, and that is something to monitor for sure. here's what I'll say about Nick Destrini, and it's just like a couple of guys we're going to talk about later in this podcast. He came over to Chicago from the Dodgers, right? The Dodgers have so many expendable, interesting players that they become interesting on other teams, and we're seeing that in a few different places. It's really not just Nick Destrini. If you really want to break it down, Ryan Pepiot is having a very interesting season over in Tampa right now, and the other one is Michael Busch in Chicago, who's hitting the cover off the baseball after not having room in Los Angeles. So the Dodgers, again, it's just interesting to see who comes out of there and performs, and they don't feel like they need these players, which is insane to me that they can just send off guys, because I'm a Tigers fan, and that's not a luxury the Tigers have had in a few years. So it's fun to see, and I think of all of the pitches that I've seen highlighted, I really liked the changeups that Nick Destrini was throwing. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of movement, looked like good deception, and fade down to the arm side. So that was a really, really nice pitch. I want to go through a couple more of these. Alexander Canario coming back up. He was always interesting to me because of the simple fact that he got traded to Chicago from San Francisco and went on this insane tear right after the trade. I think he was in the Chris Bryant deal, if I'm not mistaken. He went on this insane tear of hitting the ball and hitting home runs. And it wasn't ever, from a scouting perspective, it wasn't ever real. Like, I wasn't expecting him to come up and be this big force of power, right? But he showed he had all this in him, and he showed he could hit the ball pretty well. And he debuted last year, and he just got called back up. Do you have any interest fantasy-wise with Alexander Canario?
I wish. There's just not enough room for him on that team, even with Seiya Suzuki hitting the IL, which necessitated Canario's promotion. He's still on the short side of a platoon in the outfield there with Mike Tauchman. And I think anybody on the short side of a platoon is likely not going to be rosterable in fantasy, especially if it's a temporary platoon at that, with Suzuki likely to return in, you know, a few weeks or whatever. I think it was an oblique strain, so probably sometime in May. But anyway, yeah, I'm not picking up Canario anywhere.
Can I just say, I love that you said that you don't trust anybody on the short side of a platoon, because I'm in a 30-team league, and waivers ran this morning, and I picked up Kevin Pillar, who's on the short side of a platoon.
Hey, he's batting cleanup, though.
Well, and I have the long side of the platoon, too. I have Fletcher, but I'm just, okay. You know, it's just, you need, in 30-team leagues, you need bodies. I mean, you just need someone who's going to get playing time sometimes. I don't have a regular, everyday starting second baseman. I'm trying to get one. But right now I have Nicky Lopez, and Andy Abanez got hurt. So I have Nicky Lopez playing second. I mean, that's just kind of where I'm at. And I'm in third place last I check in this league.
That's wild.
Yeah, I always say that I don't know if you have ever been in a 30-team league, but it's way too many teams. Yeah. It is.
15 might be too many, and that's double.
It is so many, and it's kind of deep rosters too. It's insane. Anyway, it's also a dynasty league, so that, you know, makes things a little bit more interesting.
Obviously, that is a wild league.
The prospect nerd's going to be in the dynasty league. It's fine. It happens. So let's get one more of these kind of recent call-ups. I'm going to run a reliever just for you.
Ooh.
Out of Philly. I know he's been called up for a while. We've seen him. He's been hurt, but I feel like he's worth talking about, and that is Orion Kerkery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's definitely legit, and he really showed it on the biggest stage last year, as he was one of the biggest weapons in the Phillies bullpen during their run to the NLCS last year. And yeah, I think he's great. I'm really excited to see him pitch some more. We barely got to see him last year. Literally, like, during the season, he pitched like 26 innings. No, because he also threw 20 innings at high A. He went from A ball to all the way to MLB in just 1 year. That's crazy. But anyway, we didn't see much of him at the major league level, just 3 innings. And so far we've seen him just 1 inning this year. Of course, we saw him a lot in the playoffs, but Kerkering's definitely legit. I think the only problem is that the Phillies boast what I consider to be a top three bullpen in baseball. So they have plenty of options there. He's not going to be immediately thrust into a high leverage role with Matt Strom, Greg Soto, Sir Anthony Dominguez, Jeff Hoffman, and Jose Alvarado ahead of him. And without, like, a set closer, all of those guys are sort of as important as the next guy. So I think there's a shot that Sir Anthony Dominguez sort of continues to struggle, and then Kirk Ring is the number two right-handed option behind Jeff Hoffman and maybe takes over past him. But I don't see him getting too many saves because the Phillies are likely to keep him out of save chances to avoid increasing his arbitration salary in the future. But I still think he's going to be really interesting in saves plus holds leagues, probably 15 teams and deeper. I think he's definitely should be owned.
Yeah, I've been acquiring Orion Kirkring shares, but I'm in, let's say, all but one of my leagues is Dynasty. So that's kind of a different story, right? Because I'm planning on him being closer of the future.
Yes.
You know, a future star. But that, you bring up interesting points about where he's at, because Coffee Talk, we focus mostly on redraft. We're not a huge Dynasty podcast. Mm-hmm. And so you have to look at the fact that that is a stacked bullpen. And as exciting as Orion Kirkering is, I agree that it's hard to sit back and want to throw him on your roster, because it's just, it's impossible to know if he's going to get enough run to be valuable.
Yeah.
And I think you nailed it there, Jake. So I don't have much to add. I just kind of agree. That's where I'm at. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I think even on top of that though, we've seen that a team can have a closer of the future, and the future is closer to us than we really think. We saw that in Milwaukee with Abner Uribe, who Rick and I both considered to be closer of the future, you know, down the line after Devin Williams is gone, after, you know, they go through a year of a veteran closer or whatever. And then once he's in arbitration, then they go for him for 3 years as the closer, and he's taken over in just his second season. And sometimes it's just the guy with the best stuff, or even the closer of the future is just going to be the closer when they need it the most. So, I mean, nobody's really stood out enough in Philadelphia to make it feel like there's not a chance that he could take over, but we've seen crazier things. And Orion Kirkring definitely has the stuff to, you know, surprisingly vault his way into the closer role at some point this year, though I don't expect it to happen.
Man, Abner Uribe, for him to be a valuable relief option right now, to me, is wild.
Why is that?
Because I was watching Abner Uribe when he was a prospect in Double A, High A, whatever, and he had the stuff. He's always had the stuff, but it was an adventure, to say the least. Yeah. When he was a prospect, it was an adventure. It was, I don't want to say it was like the most wild command I've ever seen, because it wasn't, but it wasn't that far off. The most wild command was Riley Pint before he took his little break and came back. Mm-hmm. And whatever Riley Pint did was awesome. But like, Abner Uribe was kind of there where I'm watching through a screen and I'm kind of worried the ball's going to come through my computer. Like, that's how wild the pitches were. And like, yeah. I'm so happy. I love when players figure something out, turn around, and are able to be valuable pieces, especially when they have the velo and the stuff that Abner Uribe has. I mean, he had, he was a prospect back when I was working at Prospects Live, and I'm pretty sure we put an 80 on his fastball back then. So it was crazy the stuff he had, but it was just like, where's it going to go? I mean, he might throw it to center field. I don't know. That's the thing. So mm-hmm. I love that it's worked out, but oh my gosh, was that an adventure when he would pitch back in the day. So I'm really glad that one worked out. I do want to touch on one more reliever before we take a quick break here. And that is somebody that Nate and I talked about a few episodes ago, and Rule 5 pick Justin Slayton with Boston. And since we have another reliever person here, I just want to hear your thoughts on our friend Justin Slayton.
Yeah, he's looked incredible to start the season. 0.87 ERA across 10 and a third, and he's just walking nobody, which is a good sign. I think he's, you know, shown good command throughout his minor league career, so it's not like a big change or anything. And he stands out in a lot of really interesting pitcherless stats, like MTK percentage, which is like the percentage of pitches percentage of bad pitches in the zone. So you want that number to be lower. He's at 0.8%, which is 10th among all pitchers. That's pretty awesome. So he's not making mistake pitches in the zone. And his sweeper has looked really good as well. Not grading out too well in terms of PLV, but a 90th percentile swinging strike rate at 27.1% on the sweeper is really good. And we know that with Andrew Bailey and Kyle Bodie in town in Boston, that they are prioritizing secondary pitches or breakers over the fastball. And maybe that's a good thing for Slayton, because I wouldn't say the fastball is his best pitch. It's not a bad pitch by all means, 93rd percentile PLV, but he only throws it 26% of the time. And maybe that's a result of that slightly lower usage rate, that it's getting more production. It's having more success because it's used less often. Weirdly enough, he's locating it low in the zone despite incredible IVB on that pitch. But the vertical approach angle is bad. So I think that's like what Nick's deemed like similar to Zach Gallen, where he's got really good IVB, but very over the top arm slot. So he's better throwing it low and then pairing it with the sweeper, but everything's working out pretty well. And as a guy with a three pitch mix where all three pitches are pretty solid, I think the cutter's more average than the sweeper and four seamer are elite. But yeah, I think Slayton's pretty interesting, and there is plenty of opportunity in the Boston bullpen, given that not only is Kenley Jansen getting old and, you know, his stuff's declining, but there's no other competition there. Chris Martin's fine, but he's also old, and then there's nobody else there. So I mean, I wouldn't say Justin Slayton's going to be getting saves as the closer sometime this season, but he could be the team's top setup man for a good chunk of the season.
Well, there you go. I don't think I could have said it better myself. I think on that, we are going to take a quick break here on Coffee Talk. Of course, on Coffee Talk, we are always ready for that next cup of coffee. Stick around, because after this short break, we got more fun stuff coming up, including talking about the wild, incredibly good start by Paul Blackburn. All that's coming up here on Coffee Talk on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth, and I am joined by Jake Crumpler today. Jake, always happy to have you on this podcast, even though it's the first time. I'd be happy to have you back already. Of course, Nate is on a work conference. He will be rejoining us in a week, but Jake doing a fantastic job filling in. And we're going to jump back in. So Paul Blackburn, I don't know if this was on your bingo card. I didn't have it on mine. Might be baseball's best starting pitcher right now, whether that's by default from everybody else going down or just by the fact that he has yet to give up a run through his first three starts. Now, I have many, many thoughts on this. If you read the expected starting pitchers, you probably saw it there. But Jake, I know he's not getting many whiffs, but are you jumping at Paul Blackburn here?
I did on his last start, which went well, and I think I'm out after this. I talked about it on First Pitch this past weekend, basically just talking about, okay, Paul Blackburn's been great so far, and I'm probably starting him in his next start, but am I holding him until then? And I came to the conclusion that I don't think it's worth it. He's a guy that's not going to be on your team throughout the entire year. He is the definition of a Toby, and this is the definition of a Vargas role. I know I'm using a lot of Nick's terms, but that's sort of the way that I understand pitching after reading so much of the SP Roundup for many years. But anyway, he's a guy who doesn't strike out a lot of guys, and he's hot right now. And usually when a Toby is hot, it means they're just executing their pitches perfectly. They're commanding them exactly where they need to go. And you can tell just by the whiff numbers and the strikeout numbers that this is not going to be something that continues, because he's relying so much on balls in play. And I don't think he's a guy that's going to consistently induce like super weak contact. I think we saw last year he was at 39.3% ICR across his whole arsenal. This year, 24.6%. And I think that's pretty lucky thus far. I don't expect it to continue for long. I can see it working against the Cardinals next week, or I guess it's this week now, but I'm not holding him on a 12 team roster waiting for that start.
Yeah. So my thing with Paul Blackburn is, one, I mean, kudos to him. Fantastic start. I don't care who you're playing. You're playing major league competition. And if you're performing, you are doing something really well. So kudos to Paul Blackburn. He has faced the Cleveland Guardians in his first matchup, the Detroit Tigers, and then the Washington Nationals. Coming up, he has the Cardinals at home, the Yankees in Yankee Stadium, Baltimore at Camden Yards, and then Miami at home. So if Paul Blackburn is for real and he's going to be this new amazing pitcher that doesn't get a lot of whiffs, but somehow doesn't give up runs either. I don't even know who to compare it to. I immediately go to Kyle Hendricks, but admittedly, I don't know what his whiff numbers look like. I just know he doesn't throw that hard. So I'm guessing they can't be that high. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, if he's going to do it, fantastic, but he's got a gauntlet coming up. St. Louis's lineup has, you know, they're going to hit him if he's not doing something right. They have the type of hitters to do that with, you know, Arenado, Goldschmidt, and so on. The Yankees are just scary. I mean, that's one heck of a lineup. And then obviously Baltimore's doing really well right now. So his next few starts are going to say a lot. And I'm scared. I'll put it, I'm scared for him. I'll throw it out there like that. I mean, it's going to be a tough road. And exactly what I said in the expected starting pitchers is that I said, is Paul Blackburn the new best pitcher in baseball? I guess we'll see with some unfavorable matchups coming up. And that's the best I got for you. It's going to be a tough sledding for him. And I don't think I'm starting him for the next three or four starts. Anyone I mentioned, I don't think I trust him against them yet. I'm slow to breakouts, so that's on me if he does do well. But it just seems like it's not going to go very well the next few weeks, especially, you know, with the Yankees and the Orioles in his future.
Yeah. I don't think this is a breakout of any sorts. There's nothing like that's changed enough in his arsenal. He's not displaying increased fastball velocity or a new pitch mix. It's really just he's throwing his changeup more because he has a good feel for it right now. So it's like his best pitch. He's turning to it all the time. But this is a kitchen sink guy who's 30 years old on one of the worst teams in baseball, likely won't eclipse double digit wins. He'd be very lucky to get 10 wins this year. I think we know exactly what Paul Blackburn is, and that this is very clearly just a guy on a hot streak. And I could easily see it end against the Cardinals. I could also see him continuing it against the Cardinals and then falling off again. But I say start him in the next start, but don't hold on to him for that. Pick him up the day before if you're in a daily league.
Jake says start him. Trevor says don't. So one of us will be right. Mm-hmm. It just remains to be seen who. I think one thing, though, is that Paul Blackburn is helped by the fact that they didn't move to Sacramento already.
Mm-hmm.
Because those dimensions are going to be nightmares for pitchers. One of the lines is the major league minimum. Like that's a lazy pop fly that's just going to sail out. Like it's yeah. Already not the best rotation, and I wouldn't trust it as soon as they move to Sacramento. That's kind of where I'm at with it. So let's stick with another pitcher, and I kind of teased it a little bit earlier, but I want to talk about Ryan Pepiot, known for having a fantastic changeup. That was his calling card as a prospect with the Dodgers, and now he's with the Rays. If a guy goes from the Dodgers to the Rays, that's probably a good sign that they have something in there that is going to be really good. But I was very surprised when I looked up Pepiot's numbers. So I will hold my thoughts, Jay, because I want to hear what you have to say. Are you buying into this Dodger turned Rays pitcher who's, I mean, posting again? If I recall, it wasn't like lights out numbers, but there were some really interesting parts to it. So are you buying anything of Ryan Pepiot right now?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, could you ask for better organizations in terms of pitching development? Just really cool to see a guy, you know, show some success in LA and then leave so that I can root for him. But outside of that, like going from the Dodgers to the Rays, like I trust both of those pitching organizations. And I think the Rays are going to do some great stuff with Pepiot. I think it's awesome that he has a changeup as what was considered previously as his best pitch, because it gives you such a solid foundation to build off of, that if you can teach him to throw his fastball upstairs because he's got a great IVB and vertical approach angle, which I think he's been doing thus far, high location 53% of the time. And then also help him work out a slider that's, still below average, but it gives him a third option that he can trust for strikes. He throws it for strikes 60% of the time. I will take that. And he looked really solid against the Rockies, not too great against the Giants, but I'm super excited for him. So much so that in my home league just last night, I traded Colton Cowser for Ryan Pepiot.
Wow.
What do you think about that? It's a points league.
Oh, that's
minus points for strikeouts. And I'm down to four starting pitchers because I had Bobby Miller and Gavin Williams.
You know, that's not the, I mean, I don't know. That's just tough because I'm not the highest on Colton Cowser. That's kind of where I'm going back and forth. Cause I know that he's been playing pretty well by all accounts, by, you know, I think I still take Cowser, but I also lean towards prospects, and Pepiot doesn't have his prospect status anymore. Cowser's one of those guys, and I drop him in the player mold of does everything well, but doesn't stand out in any specific category. Sure. And I call that, and just because I think of this in terms of tools, I call that the Jonathan India mold, because he was, when I first started scouting, he was the guy who was that. Mm-hmm. He did everything average to above average. He was kind of in that 45-55 range with every single tool. And I think that's kind of where I see Colton Cowser. And those guys, I never know if I can trust him in fantasy personally.
Yeah.
So, but I do think there's enough there that he might help. But the way you described it, I mean, that's a perfectly fine deal. Obviously, if I don't have an immediate decision one way or the other, I probably think it's pretty fair. So, so with Pepiot, I know he's had some tough pulls with Texas, Colorado, and San Francisco, especially pitching in Coors, although that was really his best outing, if we're being honest with each other. Uh-huh. He's given up three home runs, so he's averaging about a home run a start. And his ERA is pretty high, despite low walks, high strikeout numbers. So are you thinking it's going to just even out, or are you only starting him against maybe favorable rosters, matchups? That's where I'm getting kind of lost with him, because he didn't give up any home runs in Coors, to his credit. But against Texas and against San Francisco, he was giving up home runs, getting hit around. So are you worried about any sort of contact that he's giving up, or and how that's translating to, you know, runs? I think his ERA is over 5 right now, which I know it's early and it's only 3 starts, but
yeah,
just monitoring trends.
Yeah, I don't think I put so much weight into the home runs, especially just 3 starts into the season. Like, we can't really trust many numbers at this point, so you really have to go as granular as possible. And when it comes to home runs, those are just so influenced by luck and small samples that it's not even something I'm considering at all. I'm really just looking at how is he using his pitches, which pitches are he using, which pitches is he using, and what are the metrics for those pitches, and then, you know, strikeout and walk numbers. And the fact that he's striking out over 30% of batters, his walk rate is below 8%, and he's has intent upstairs with his slider and the changeup, and or intent upstairs with the four seamer, and then the changeup and slider are coming in to help for swinging strikes. Then I mean, that's like everything you would want from him. And on top of all of that, I trust the Rays so much that whatever he's doing wrong, they're going to help him figure it out. And maybe that means it's a demotion to AAA at some point, or maybe that means he only throws 120 innings. And that's something that you're going to have to live with a young pitcher on the Rays. But I trust him so much that I think he's going to find success when he's in the majors.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just had to ask the question because, you know, you look at the numbers and early on, you can't put stock into them, as you said, but early on, I'm also looking at trends. Like, what is the trend of this? And does the home run mean that he's giving up plenty of hard contact? Because as much as I would love to watch every single baseball game that's ever played, I can't. So, you know, I haven't caught a Ryan Pepiot start. I don't actually know how he's using his pitches. I know what they are. I saw him in the minors, but I want to know, you know, are the home runs, is that him giving up a lot of hard contact and a few just found their way over the fence, or not? Is that something to take into account? And that's, I think, more what you should be looking for at this point.
Sure.
Is what do the numbers point to in terms of potential trends? And that's kind of what I was getting at with that question, I think, is just, are you worried about any of those trends? And as you said, no, you're not. And I wouldn't be either. So that's good. And another guy who I had teased a little bit, Michael Bush, the Dodgers kept wanting to give Gavin Lux some run, and eventually Michael Busch finds his way to Chicago, where in his first 50 at bats, he's slashing 340, 404, 760 with six home runs. And he's just hitting the cover off the ball, being one of the best hitters in Chicago right now. Mm-hmm. Do you think the Dodgers have any seller's remorse, or are you buying this being real? I mean, where, Jake, is Michael Busch somebody that if we don't have, we should be going after?
I hope the Dodgers have seller's remorse. I'm always hoping for them to have whatever negative feelings they have.
Yeah, hang on, this is your second negative comment towards the Dodgers. So who do you root for?
They are unlimited. I'm a Giants fan, as you can see.
We figured it out. Okay, there we go. I just wanted to get that out there.
Yes. Anybody familiar with me knows that I'm I think I might be more of a Dodgers hater than I am a Giants fan. Which maybe that says something about me personally, but I think Michael Busch is super interesting. There was a time for me where I thought he was just a quad A guy, where some of the stuff that he did was like, he was just so good across the board that sometimes those guys, I think, can get lost in the shuffle where they're so good at hitting, but then maybe they don't have the fielding to give them a spot on the roster. And that seemed to be the case with Busch, but he's got a shot at first base here in Chicago and he's taking full advantage of it. We saw how good he could be at AAA in each of the past two seasons. And last year was even better than the year before. But yeah, I'm really pumped. He's already set a new max exit velocity at 109 miles per hour. He's homered in five straight games. He's got everyday playing time for a pretty strong Cubs lineup. I think I'm going for it. I mean, I don't see anything that's glaring in terms of, oh, this is not sustainable. Of course, a 355 BABIP isn't going to maintain, but if he could bat 270 with 25 home runs, that would be pretty awesome.
I love that you talked about positionality and the defensive side of the baseball, because when we do fantasy baseball analysis, a lot of times defense just gets lost because it's not some of the counting stats that help you win. But, Nate and I have talked about in the past what defense can do for a prospect, right? If a prospect's good at defense, that gives them a floor and that gives them a lot of run because they can help the team even if they're not hitting. And so that gives them more time to figure it out. Busch was kind of the flip side of that, as you mentioned. Where is he going to play defensively? And there are guys like that all over the place. Where is he going to play defensively? And that in itself can become an issue in terms of A, maybe getting some run, or B, where do you even fit in? Michael Busch might have been a quad A guy if the Dodgers didn't trade him to Chicago, because they might have just not known where he fits into their roster. I mean, if he's a first baseman, they got Freddie Freeman. You know, if he's a third baseman, they got somebody there too. It's just really hard for a guy if they don't have a set position or a set group of positions. Like sometimes, you know, a guy's just a middle infielder, right? Some of these guys aren't as strong defensively, and that can bring up a lot of questions when it comes to how they fit into a future roster. And Michael Busch was a part of that. Obviously, he found some luck at first base in Chicago, but I love that you brought it up because that doesn't get talked about a lot, but it is something that when you're looking into prospects that you should take into account. If a scouting report says, who knows where this guy's going to play, then that might be something that holds them back in the future. I think, I don't think he's necessarily bad defensively, but Justin Foscue, I think, kind of fell into that a little bit, who just got called up for the Rangers. It's like he can play all over the infield, but where's he going to fit in?
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff plays into it. Unfortunately, Foscue got hurt. I'm a huge Justin Foscue fan. But there's just those questions. Davis Schneider, if we want to bring Nate back into the conversation, that's Nate's guy. He was kind of like, what's he going to do? Where's his home defensively? And it's a legitimate question sometimes. It's not just something we say when we don't think a guy's very good at defense when we're putting together scouting reports. It's a legitimate question with some guys.
Yeah, I mean, same thing with somebody you mentioned earlier, Jonathan India, where it's like he's so good at so many things offensively. He's an average defender, but it's like, okay, but where is his best position? Where can we get the most out of him? And it seems like nowhere. And when you have so many other guys, a guy like India or Busch or Foscue can get lost in the shuffle as other guys surpass them, or the team prioritizes other areas like defense. But I just the fact that he's got an everyday role at first base, as long as he's hitting like this, they're not going to mess with him. They're not going to send him down because they have a better defensive first baseman, or they're not going to platoon him or anything like that. I think Bush is going to be fine. But yeah, it's definitely important to consider that. I think going into next year, that'll be something to heavily consider if Bush can stick on that team, just because of his lack of positional flexibility.
Yeah, and let me give one more example, actually, because I can think of one from the Tigers. I'm a Tigers fan. I watch a lot of Tigers and Tigers minor league. Justin Henry Molloy, who they acquired in a trade with the Braves, is in his second year in AAA right now, and it's not because he's stalled out or the bat's not going to work. He actually takes really good at bats. I think he's got a lot of skills offensively. You know, he can draw walks. He knows the zone pretty well. He's got some pop. But where's he going to play? I mean, I know they have Gio Urshela right now at third base, and he has been at third base, and that shouldn't be the question. But I don't know that he's the best defender necessarily, and that makes it hard for the Tigers to want to, you know, plug him in. He's also played the outfield. I don't know if he does that well enough to play the outfield in Detroit, because they've got some pretty decent defending outfielders right now. So that kind of stuff happens, and I don't think that in the fantasy community, the role of defense, even if it is minor, I get that it's not what wins you fantasy leagues, but I just don't think that the role of defense gets as much talk as it should sometimes. I don't think we need to talk about it every time we talk about a player. Don't get me wrong, but I think it does have a place, and I'm glad that you brought that up, Jake. I really am. So
you're welcome.
With that, I think it's time for another quick break. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be back. We'll be talking more about, we're going to pick up our MLB pipeline prospect list. We're going to start, I believe, at number 40. So we will get that going. We come back. Once again, Jake Crumpler is joining us in place of Nate Kosher. My name is Trevor Huth, and you are listening to Coffee Talk as part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth, and I am joined by Crump, Jake Crumpler. There we go. Got the nickname in. Had to try to use it. All right. Of course, as mentioned, Nate, not here. We'll be back next week. We miss him dearly, but we are happy Jake is here to fill in. We've had great conversations. We just talked way too long about defense for a fantasy baseball podcast. I love it. I'm here for it. Now we're going to jump back into some prospects. Nate and I have been going down the MLB Pipeline's top 100, Jake, and we're going about 10 at a time or so, and we ended off with number 39. We had talked about Jason Dominguez, and obviously he's somebody you're looking forward to next year, so we're going to start at number 40, and that is Emmanuel Rodriguez. He's somebody that I have seen live. He's in Double-A right now. He's not projected to necessarily help this year. He's projected to be up in 2025, but who knows? If he hits really well, anything can happen. Do you know much about Emmanuel Rodriguez? Do you have any thoughts?
I don't know much about him. I have seen a couple of things on Twitter just suggesting that he's a really advanced hitter. And just by looking at his Fangraphs page, yeah, when you're walking over 20% of the time as an early 20s year old, that's going to play. I don't know anything outside of that. He seems like he's got some power, some speed, and some great plate discipline, and that's a good combination for somebody coming up.
He does have power. The power is real, I will say that. This is somebody who I've seen live, and I've been able to scout live. And the power is absolutely real. He's walking a lot. Obviously, he does have some plate skills. He knows, you know, the zone pretty well. I will put in, out the disclaimer that I saw him very early last year. I saw him in the opening weekend last year. So it's still very cold. He was playing in the middle of the country in Illinois, where it was definitely cold. Maybe not used to the cold. That might have, you know, hindered his performance. When I saw him, and I am very much on record with this, you can look it up. I've said it. I've written about it. My only worry with Emmanuel Rodriguez is that he slips over the line of patient into passive when he's at the plate. And the difference is patient means you're not swinging at bad pitches. Patient means you're still looking to hit, but you're willing to take your walk. Passive is kind of you're up there just looking to walk. You don't want to swing your bat. You're just going to watch a bunch of pitches and hope something good happens for you. And I, in that opening weekend, read him as passive. obviously, if he's going to be hitting home runs and hitting pretty well, he's not completely passive, because you can't, you really can't be a good hitter if you're looking to walk all the time. You're not going to swing the bat very often, and you probably aren't going to make very good contact. So obviously he has found his way out of that. My worry is that he falls back into it just because he wants to draw these walks, and he is very confident in his ability with the strike zone, that he falls over that line. And if he's passive, that deadens some of the fantasy value. Unless you're in an OBP league, obviously, and he's walking 20% of the time, then he's going to have value. But in terms of just hitting the ball, I don't know if I trust his approach enough based on what I've seen. Now, he's in Double A and he's had success. So obviously he's a very good prospect and he's got a lot of plate skills. I would just warn people that he might get passive at times and that could hurt his performance, I think, is where I'm at.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
Next, we're going to skip over him at 41, is Termar Johnson. He is playing in high A ball. He probably will not debut this year. Jet Williams in Double A. He is skyrocketing for the New York Mets. And I think that if all goes well and he continues to be the Jet Williams that he is right now, I think he might earn a call up towards the end of this season. He's got a lot of skills. Again, Jake, do you have any thoughts? Do you know much about Mr. Jet Williams?
I know he was a first round pick in 2022, the same year that Termar Johnson went in the first round, fourth overall. So that's a good transition there. The thing with him is that all of his production has come at very low levels of the minors, which not to discredit him, but it makes it hard to project going forward. It's like, okay, we really need to see him prove it again. We saw a lot of speed in 2023, 44 steals, as well as a little bit of power and a great play approach. But yeah, it'd be interested to hear what you have to say about him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's a great athlete. First of all, he's in Double A right now. He's seven games into his season at the time of recording this. He's hitting 185. So obviously he's not lighting the world on fire at Double A, but he's got a lot of skills. I mean, even though he's hitting 185, he's already got a pair of doubles and a triple, and is stolen a couple bases. Like, he's still finding ways to perform despite the fact that he's not performing, which is, I mean, that's key, right? He's making things happen when he is able to hit the ball. I don't necessarily know that the call-up's coming this year. I think people are just getting excited because they like the skills and the ability, but the skills and ability are absolutely all there. So I would expect that the 20-year-old is going to adjust to Double A. He's a 20-year-old in Double A. Let's just call that what it is right now. That's amazing. Yeah. That's really good, right? So I wouldn't worry about his early season struggles or anything right now. I think he'll come around. Great player, great athlete, great tools, and that's about where I'm at with Jet Williams. He's going to find a spot to play somewhere. Guy who probably will help you this year at some point out of Milwaukee at 43 is Tyler Black. Have you put much thought and time into Tyler Black? Because I have, and I am a fan. But also, when I say I'm a fan, I am terrible at watching for fantasy outlook. I watch for skills and I watch for baseball player. So a lot of times, when if I'm a fan of a guy, he's good at real life baseball, doesn't necessarily mean he's going to help you in fantasy. So what do you know about Tyler Black, Jake?
I just remember him from the offseason and him sort of coming out of nowhere. Like, you look at the NFBC ADP and you're just like, all right, who am I missing on my rankings? And you're like, you come up across Tyler Black and you're like, who is this guy? Where did this guy come from? Because he wasn't really a huge top prospect before. And then last year, he just showed incredible speed with improved power at the plate, 18 home runs and 55 steals. I think I did that math right. And then on top of that, it just incredible plate discipline. He was walking 15% of the time, striking out less than 20% of the time at AAA, under 14% actually. And so that's really exciting, because it sounds like a guy that can produce and provide speed, which is always difficult to find at a position, third base, where there's not a lot of speed to go around. It's like Ke'Bryan Hayes and maybe some other guys will throw in some steals, but there's not really many speedsters at the hot corner. And then just the whole package on a team that could use some help in the infield. I don't think there's anybody blocking Black, and he's looked really solid. And to make it all the way up to AAA and still have success there and still just be 23 years old, there's a lot to get excited about him. And even if he does get called up this year, which I truly expect it to happen, as a left-hander, if he is platooned, he'll be on the strong side of a platoon, which I am totally fine with rostering.
Yeah, so I went and looked it up because I knew I had a tweet out there somewhere about this. May 19th, 2022. Every time I watch the Brewers high affiliate, I'm blown away by Tyler Black. He's really good, in my opinion.
Nice.
That was me, right? I love Tyler Black. I knew it was out there. This is kind of cool doing this because all the prospects that I used to tweet about are kind of making it to the majors, and I get to relive my glory days when I was actually good at the scouting thing.
Yeah.
and I'll tell you what. It was the hit tool for me. It's hard to scout speed on video. So the speed is great. I'm glad he has the speed. That's probably going to be what he's most helpful with in terms of fantasy outlook. Because I don't know that he's necessarily going to have the power that you know, just to be a consistent power bat in your fantasy lineup. I don't think that's going to happen. But what I do know is he has really good bat to ball skills, and that's what impressed me. You know, I would watch him and he would take a pitch the other way in the, at the right time. He would just do all of the things you want to do from somebody who has a good hit tool. And he had good, you know, he had good bat to ball skills, good hand eye, all that stuff. I loved his ability to hit the ball. And I think that guys who have good hit tools, obviously that translates because you're looking at the same thing. So I'm hoping it'll translate still with him, and I'm hoping his speed will help him to become somebody relevant in fantasy. But I gotta say, I fell in love with the hit tool, and that's not always a good thing for fantasy, right? Because if they're a light hitting guy, doesn't help you out a whole lot. But I think Tyler Black has some skills that will be able to help people out in fantasy, especially if he's going to be getting on base. A few more here. Of course, we always skip over some guys who may not help us this year. Owen Cassie in AAA for the Cubs at 44. He is another guy who kind of just does a bunch of stuff pretty well. He's power over hit, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his biggest help for the Cubs is actually with his glove.
Hmm.
So I don't know how much you have about Owen Cassie, but I don't know that he's going to have I think he's kind of the opposite of Tyler Black. I think he's going to have power. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the hit tool is going to be there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of pick your poison.
Ooh, I'd definitely rather have the hit tool there because guys with lack of contact can almost become non-existent at the plate when, at least if you're making a lot of contact, you know, it doesn't really matter how much power you're making. You can bat 300 with one home run and still be really good. But if you're batting, you know, 180 with 30 home runs, you're just Joey Gallo and you're playing for the Nationals. But I think Casey looks like your prototypical right fielder. Cannon of an arm, big power. And yeah, I'm just very concerned about the strikeouts. We saw 31% strikeout rate at AA last year. So far in AAA, 14 games, 32%. Even during spring training, when he actually looked pretty interesting this offseason, two home runs, two steals, batted .333, but 29.5% strikeout rate. I think guys striking out over 30% of the time are going to struggle in the majors, especially because most of the time, if you're striking out 30% of the time in the minors, that goes up a few more percent when you hit the majors. And then he's striking out 35%, and then he's almost unplayable because he's batting 200.
You think he's talking about a Cubs prospect, but that was actually anti-Elly De La Cruz agenda coming out. No, I remember that being a thing with Elly, though, is his massive strikeout numbers. And I'm mm-hmm. with you, but also I have a really hard time not falling for these guys. I really do. I know it, too. Like, I know this is a grenade that I'm going to fall on, and I am ready and willing to fall on it constantly. And it's because they're so fun. I mean, it's just, there's no other way around it. You watch it and you're like, anything could happen at any moment. I know right now I am a huge fan of Denzel Clark, who is this exact mold of questionable hit tool, big power, good defense. What Clark has over Casey is that he's fast, and Casey's not the fastest guy out there, but it's just so hard not to fall for these guys. I'm just to be completely transparent, because they're so fun in a game. And when you see it all come together, you're like, oh my gosh, I mm-hmm. want that. Like, I want that to be the baseball player they are. The example I always give is I'm fully aware of the volatility with a guy like Denzel Clark. I think he's a 70 glove in center field. I think he's fast. I think he has a lot of untapped power that he can get to. Granted, he's 6'5 and built like a wide receiver, so you assume the power's there.
but he doesn't hit the ball great. And my major league comp for him, like my top level, if everything works out, major league comp for him is Byron Buxton.
Really?
Yes. And it's only, and it's just that I'm bad at comps. Like I'm not looking at how they're hitting or anything. I'm thinking a guy with power, not as great of a hit tool, speed and good defense. And to me, that's Buxton. But that's such a low percentage outcome for a guy like that. And I think that Casey falls in that mold too of you want to believe in that highest percentage outcome, but it is a low percentage or they're going to reach it. And that's the problem. And that's where the hit tool guys have that safer floor. So this is really, what are you willing to bet on? And I'm always, as a prospect guy, willing to bet on prospects that have high ceilings. But if you're not a guy who bets on those high ceilings, then you're going to gravitate towards a guy like Tyler Black. And that makes perfect sense. And if you like those high ceilings, you might gravitate towards a guy like Owen Casey, because he's going to have that higher ceiling, especially in fantasy. If you like walks and home runs on your offense, which is basically how I build every one of my fantasy teams, mm-hmm. he's going to be a guy you want to go and get. But that also is going to leave you high and dry a lot, because sometimes it just doesn't work out. And that, you know, that's a profile. The low hit tool profile is one that doesn't work out a lot. And I think you just have to bet on what you think is going to happen. And you know, a good friend of mine, Reese White, loves Owen Casey. He's a very smart prospect mind. So I'm inclined to believe Owen Casey's got a real shot here. Is how I'll end this, because I do want to end it positively with Owen Casey. He's got lots of baseball skill. I'm not saying he's not going to be any good. He's got a lot of baseball skill, and the scouts that I know, they love him. So the question is, how is that hit tool going to translate to the majors? And the only way you're really going to know that is if you go and watch a ton of Owen Casey tape and you make your own decision on it. Because mm-hmm. everybody's going to be split, I think.
Yeah.
I just went off, and I am so sorry, but it had to happen. So we're going to move along here. Brady House at 45, we will skip over. He's in Double-A for the Nationals right now. Mick Abel, though, might be interesting. He is projected by MLB Pipeline to debut in 2024. And he is in Triple-A for the Phillies right now. Mick Abel, a fun pitcher with some fun stuff.
Totally. I find him a little bit underwhelming. I don't know what it is, but he seems like he's going to come up and just be like a solid workhorse that can go out there and give you a ton of innings while, you know, pitching to a 24-25% strikeout rate. Like, I get Merrill Kelly vibes from him. I have no idea what Abel's stuff is, and I don't imagine that it's similar to Kelly's, mostly by the fact that he's got a 65 grade fastball, and that's not Kelly's bread and butter. But just, you know, being a guy that can go out and you can trust, but he doesn't have that like top 20 SP upside. I don't know.
That's fair. I'll tell you the vibe I've always gotten from Mick Abel. I always have fun watching him. I always like watching him. I think he's going to be a pretty good pitcher. I get the vibe from him that he's a dude that will eventually find his way out of Philadelphia and wind up with an organization that's just going to unlock something incredible in him. Whether that's the Rays or the Dodgers. I'm sure there's other options. Guardians, maybe. Who knows? But I think that there's, and I don't know this. I'm not looking at the data. Like, I'm basing this purely off of watching him pitch just with my eyes. And it feels like there's something in there, and I couldn't tell you what it is because I'm not that smart, but it feels like there's something in there that can take him to the next level. And I don't know if the Phillies are going to pull it out of him.
Sure.
And so it's an interesting breakdown. I like your breakdown that you had. I also just want to throw out there that if he ever goes to the Rays, that could be really, really fun for everybody involved.
just every pitcher on the Rays.
It's just the way he pitches. I can't even describe what I mean. That's the problem. Like, it's just a gut feeling, I think, that there's something else in there that somebody's going to be able to pull out. I just don't know if it's going to be the Phillies. And he feels like somebody who could, I mean, he's still just 22 years old right now.
Yeah.
Right. So he feels like somebody who in a few years down the road at, you know, 26, 27 is going to find that next level with a new team and potentially really be a fun pitcher. Mm-hmm. But I think either way, he's going to be pretty fun. And I think I'm a little higher on him than you are, but I don't think he's necessarily going to like come in and have the upside of Andrew Painter, his teammate, who will be back in a year. Right. So I do think that upside isn't quite there right now, but I do think there's more in the tank is where I'm leaving my thoughts there. Moving along, Noah Schultz, one of my favorite pitchers in all of the minors. Unfortunately, he's in high A, probably not going to debut. Chase DeLander, same thing with him. Drew Gilbert, though, is interesting, and he's going to be the last guy we talk about, Jake. So Drew Gilbert with the Mets, started with the Astros, was traded to the Mets. He's in AAA right now and projected by MLB Pipeline to debut this year. And arguably another guy who fits into that Jonathan India mold of does everything really well. But what do you think, Jake?
Yeah, I don't know much about Drew Gilbert. There's something about Mets prospects where a lot of the, middle tier Mets prospects, they sort of get lost in the shuffle. Like everyone knows like Ronnie Mauricio and Brett Beatty, but then these other random dudes, I don't know what it is about not being so tapped into the Mets thing. Maybe it's a personal thing again. And the fact that he switched teams from the Astros to the Mets. And that's where I remember his name from. What trade was that? Astros, Justin Verlander trade. He seems pretty interesting. You mentioned that he sort of does everything pretty well. We see great contact. He hit 18 home runs across three levels last year. Two levels. It was across two teams at AA and showed a little speed as well. I think the Mets could use basically anybody to upgrade that team. And while I don't totally expect them to call him up this year, a 2025 debut seems all but guaranteed. I don't know. I haven't considered Gilbert enough, I guess, because I seem to be unable to reach a conclusion on if this is a guy that I'm excited about.
I am excited. I like Drew Gilbert. I liked him, dating back to his college days. So, I've kind of been a fan. But what I really like, honestly, is that finally the Mets are trading for an exciting outfielder instead of trading them away. If we recall in recent history, the Mets have traded Pete Crow Armstrong for half a season of Javi Baez. Which, by the way, he's in Detroit now, and I can tell you, not worth it. Because Pete Crow Armstrong's really, really good. I'm a huge Pete Crow Armstrong fan. And they also traded Jared Kelenic to the Mariners a few years back. So it's good to see them getting a top 100 outfielder rather than trading them away. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing. I like Gilbert. I think he's going to provide some value across the board. I don't know that he's going to be your, like, superstar stud again. But where we are on the prospect list, that's not what we're expecting. But I think Drew Gilbert does have some skills. And he's going to be a guy that you're going to want to roster if he does get the call. That's just kind of how I feel. We'll have to see what happens. If he performs well, they're going to have no choice but to call him up unless they really want to push for him to try to get them an extra draft pick next year. But then you have to wonder, is he a guy that could win Rookie of the Year? So, decision to be made by the Mets, but if they do decide to call him up, I think that's going to be pretty good. And I think he'll be worth it. Jake, thank you so much for filling in for Nate. Appreciate having you. If you could tell everyone where they can find you, where they can find your work.
Totally. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. I'm always happy to help out and join the show. Hey, maybe next time I can do it with both you guys here, both you and Nate.
Absolutely.
That would be great. But you can find me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. Once again, you can hear me on the In the Pen podcast every Friday. You can hear me on the First Pitch podcast every Saturday and Sunday. You can catch my personal podcast, Free Baseball, generally once a week. That goes live on at Athletes Hub on Twitter. And then also you can find my playing time analysis at Baseball HQ, and you can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com.
Fantastic. Great summary. Of course, you can find my work. It all comes through my X account at Huth Trevor. Appreciate you listening and appreciate you joining us once again for some coffee talk, where we are always ready for that next cup of coffee. Make sure to tune in next week. Nate will be back. We'll talk about more great baseball stuff here on Coffee Talk, as a part of the Pitcher List Podcast Network.